Hello and welcome to Healthy Bloomington with Dr. Andry. I am Dr. Matt Andry, a family physician here in Bloomington, Indiana, and I'm sort of on location today. I'm meeting with a wonderful colleague and a very important mentor of mine, Dr. Pam Smith, and we'll be talking a little bit about all the things that Dr. Smith does and what her interests are in medicine. But as you know, on this program, we are here to try to empower people to get the most out of their interactions with their healthcare providers and to give them information about sort of what is new in the direction that medicine is going. Dr. Smith, thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Oh, this is wonderful. And I'm actually up here in Traverse City, and I just made a couple phone calls. I know that Dr. Smith had her office here, and it just worked out. So this is very fortuitous.
It is, absolutely.
And I say mentor. One of the things that you do, you are currently the director of the Center for Healthy Living and Longevity, and you have clinics throughout Michigan. Is that right?
We do.
Yeah. And you also are very involved with physician education.
I am. I co-direct the master's program in metabolic and nutritional medicine at the University of South Florida College of Medicine, which is called the Morsani College of Medicine.
Excellent. How did South Florida become a location for that program?
Well, that's very interesting you would ask that. I went down to the University of South Florida to give a seminar on weight loss from a more metabolic approach, because we all know that calories in and calories out, if that's all there was to weight loss, everybody would be the weight they want to be.
Absolutely.
But it's not. It's a multifactorial problem. There's many reasons, as you know, that people have trouble losing weight or being the weight they want to be. And I went down to give this seminar. I was very lucky. A physician heard me, and she introduced me to the dean there. And it took about 3 years, but we actually developed a master's degree in this field.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, you are, I'm not trying to flatter you here, but you're widely known as one of the finest hormone physicians and weight physicians in really the world, and I've written several books, one of them which was a very big influence on my practice, and that is What You Must Know About Women's Hormones. And I love the way you phrase the title of those books. It speaks to something that's been very important to me. I feel like one of my most important missions is to give people as much understanding and information as I have. And I think that historically, medicine has not necessarily done this, or the way that medicine has been done in America. It's rather felt more like, kind of like a the law practice. Let's keep as much information away from people as we can so that we hold on to power. Where I've sort of believed that my true value has been in doing the opposite. I want my patients to know everything I think I know, and so that we can speak the same language, and so that they can make their health decisions. And I've always felt like you did that too.
I absolutely, totally agree with you. It really is a partnership between the patient and the physician.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things I wanted to talk about, certainly one of your main focuses has been in the area of functional medicine. And in medicine, as with everything else, the way we name things has great impact on the way we think about them. My favorite example of that is growth hormone. If we called it anything other than growth hormone, we wouldn't have near the trouble with it that we do. But because we call it that, it really colors the way what we think that hormone really does and all that it does. But functional medicine is it's an interesting term. And I've always said, you know, people have asked me what it is, and I said, well, it's anything except dysfunctional medicine. But could you tell people what you think functional medicine is?
Well, functional medicine looks at how the body works, because now in 2015, we really can do customized and personalized medicine. So we want to prevent disease. If you already have a disease, then we want to look at the cause of the problem, not just treat symptoms, and also customize the care to you.
Mm-hmm. I've always felt like, people ask me, how did I get interested in doing functional medicine? And I said, it's because I have a bad habit of asking why.
Well, my patients say that I'm Dr. House, except for I'm not grumpy.
I love it. I love it. And my journey was really about, I was a resident, and I had patients that had so many health problems. And everything that my mentors were teaching me to take care of was so impacted by weight. And that I said, you know, if I just fixed weight for patients, I would fix many other things at the same time. And so I started doing that, and I took the tools that I knew, and they work. And then for some people, they didn't work at all. And then for a lot of those people for whom it didn't, and that's when I became a member of the ASBP, American Society of Bariatric Physicians. And but there were all these people for whom it didn't work. And then a huge bunch of them, it seemed like their hormones were in the way. And then I started getting into and doing a lot of hormone therapy. And then I started asking, well, why are their hormones messed up? And then it always came back to things like nutrition and toxic exposures and these other, you know, all these other entities. But how does someone go about finding a physician who is, well, this is another topic in and of itself, and that's certification. Because I know another interest of yours has been trying to bridge the gap between what has been clinically sort of an outlier in medicine and bringing that more to understanding as completely not only valid but extremely helpful and answers a lot of questions. But what should people look for in a physician to get someone who's a good functional medicine doctor?
You want to see a real functional medicine physician. It's like any other physician. You want to see someone who's fellowship trained in this field. So you want to ask what their education is. It's very different to see somebody who's done a weekend course versus someone who's done an entire fellowship, advanced fellowship, or even has a master's degree in this field.
Mm-hmm. Now, the master's degree, is this just for MDs?
It is not. The master's degree is for PAs and nurse clinicians. It's also for PhDs. It's for pharmacists. Of course, it's physicians. But you know what? It really takes all of us to help people be healthy. So we have chiropractors and many kind of different therapies that we offer in the program.
Has that been one of the barriers to getting more of the kind of old guard medicine to understand the value in a lot of the functional medicine concepts?
I think sometimes, but part of the problem is to get everybody on the same page is that we do have to go back and retrain. And doctors are just very, very busy the way the healthcare system is set up. So we're trying to find new ways of teaching clinicians, mm-hmm. and that way they can get on the same page where we can do a more personalized approach.
Absolutely. In terms of your own personal practice, I know that you are incredibly busy, incredibly in demand, and you have people that help. And one of the things that's been difficult for me, and I think anyone who does really well at this, is that as people understand that you can be helpful, access is harder. And then you're relying on, in the last couple of years have added 2 care extenders, and I swore forever I was never going to do that. But I had more people coming than I could possibly see myself. And then trusting someone else to do that was, in all honesty, difficult. And maybe I'm a little bit of a control freak, and that's part of the problem. But what I found is that, you know, my care extenders actually, they brought things to the table I didn't.
Absolutely. I have a physician's assistant in my practice, and she's fabulous. The interesting thing is she came from a very conventional approach. She had not done this kind of medicine. But when I was interviewing people, the reason I hired her was that she was kind. I figured you can always teach people a more functional approach. Mm-hmm. It's hard to teach someone kindness. And that's really how she came to my practice 7 years ago.
That's brilliantly said. Just like any staff, you know, you hire for personality and you train for competency. I very much believe that as well. There's an element of treating people where we take the knowledge that we have and there is an intuitive side to it. And I've heard you speak, and I always feel like you without, and again, in medicine, when we're talking to our colleagues and those who make big decisions in terms of residencies and who's going to be specialists and so forth, they struggle, I think, with some of the things that don't have as much hard data in the journals that they have sort of propounded and said accepted. But you are working diligently to get more functional medicine practitioners and research and work in front of the eyes of these same people.
Absolutely. Right? In fact, one very interesting area is nutritional depletions caused by medications. Mm. Most people don't realize that every medicine they take causes 1 or 2 nutritional depletions.
Like metformin and B12.
Like metformin and B12. And metformin also depletes the body of a very important nutrient called coenzyme Q10, mm-hmm. which is a major fueling source in the body. And a lot of times when people take medicines like metformin, which both you and I use a lot in our practice, it's a great medicine. But what we have to do is also give B vitamins and coenzyme Q10 to people, and then they don't feel so much fatigue and have muscle aches and pains.
Absolutely. In that same topic, there's another class of medicines that really does affect CoQ10. Do you do the same thing with statins?
I do. Statin drugs are great medications to lower cholesterol. But with my patients that are on statin drugs, I also give them coenzyme Q10. Also, patients that are on hydrochlorothiazide, which is a water pill we use for high blood pressure, those people too get depleted in Q10. So the same thing. We want to give those nutrients that get depleted.
Absolutely. A lot of our patients also, we sort of have a stepwise fashion in terms of the way that we treat them. We've tried to put a name on this, and I don't know if it's called reasonable medicine or improvement medicine or something like that. But and something that a lot of our clients have appreciated about our practice is that, you know, if you're really, really sick with, say, something like Crohn's disease, we're not going to say, well, you know, here's our probiotics and some supplements and go. If you're severely anemic because you're bleeding, you may need a more severe, more standard medical treatment for a period of time, and then we look over time to use something less invasive. Is that an approach that you find that works with patients?
Absolutely. I'm a very conventionally trained internal medicine physician, and I believe in conventional medicine. It's very important when a patient is acutely ill that we treat them conventionally and we do all the things that we've always done. The way I phrase it is, I just have a few more tricks in my bag that I add to the very conventional approach. For example, a patient came to me recently, and she was one of my regular patients, and she was feeling a little fatigued. Mm-hmm. We did her blood count. It was low, so I sent her to her primary care physician for a further evaluation. It turned out she had colon cancer.
Oh, wow.
The good news is we caught it very early, mm-hmm. and we use very conventional medicine. But now what we're doing is adding some other things to her chemotherapy where we're building her immune system when she gets done with her chemotherapy.
That's wonderful. You know, people say, where did you go to school or where did you train? And I always say, in the end, it's Andrew Medical Services. Because I feel like all the time my patients are teaching me.
Oh, absolutely. My patients teach me as much as I teach them, and really that's the way it should be.
I agree. When I'm teaching to my medical students, I'll always say something like, hey, don't get married to ideas, because if you're going to keep learning, you don't want a messy divorce.
I like that.
Yeah, feel free. Use it all you want. But, you know, it's very hard, I think, when we've got clinicians and so many in our field who do great work, and they have seen the value of the education they've had and the principles that they use make tremendous differences for people, that they feel like they need to hold a standard. And that sometimes causes resistance to new ideas. But one of the things I always want to do for listeners and for my patients is help them get more of what they need or are looking for from the clinicians that they have. What advice would you have to someone to say, let's say that someone who has struggled with Crohn's disease and they've done a course of Remicade and they're now doing better, but they'd really like to look into getting probiotics, looking into food sensitivities and the ways that these impact their GI health, but their clinician may be resistant to that. What things could that person do to kind of further or help that relationship with that clinician, if anything?
Well, one thing, people need to keep their primary care physician, but then they should see someone like you who is fellowship trained in this field to augment. In the meantime, one thing that they can do is to start probiotics, good bacteria. We do know that a lot of people with Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis do have issues with gluten, for example. So we try and take all patients with those diseases off of gluten. We try and do allergy testing to see what kind of foods they're allergic to and take them off as well. People can at least look at some other ideas of foods that are common allergens before mm-hmm. they would see you. Mm-hmm. For example, they might want to also come off of dairy, mm-hmm. off of soy, off of eggs. Those are the most four common allergens, very hard on the gut. We want to decrease inflammation.
Can you explain, and again, this is something that I think patients come to me so much more self-informed than they ever did And some of that information they have is really pretty good. Can you explain how food sensitivities and a condition like Crohn's disease could be related?
Absolutely. In order to be healthy, first of all, you have to have a healthy gastrointestinal tract, otherwise known as your gut. Mm-hmm. In fact, 70% of your immune system is in your gut.
Well, it's the only place we on purpose expose ourselves to foreign proteins 3 times a day.
Absolutely. And people don't realize that allergies can be 2 different kinds. We're all familiar with an IgE response, mm-hmm. where if you eat shrimp, for example, and you're allergic, you start itching, get short of breath. Less commonly are we familiar with what we call an IgG response. That doesn't happen immediately. Mm-hmm. It happens the next day or 2 days later, and people don't usually get short of breath. They get things like weight gain, mm-hmm. and they get headaches, and it increases their risk of autoimmune diseases, which are diseases where the body attacks itself, like Crohn's disease. The funny thing about looking at these IgG responses is they increase something called epinephrine and norepinephrine. Mm-hmm. And they kind of give you a high when you eat these foods. And so people don't realize they're allergic to them. They actually get a high, so they want to eat these foods all the time. I personally will not test myself for chocolate. It could be an issue.
I love that. I think that one of the things I always try to tell my patients is, to your point, you know, they feel a little better for a short time when they eat something. And there's nothing wrong with wanting to feel better, but trying to understand that what might make you feel better right now may not be what makes you feel better later is a tough concept, because that's hard to reinforce from a evolutionary standpoint, and that takes education and teaching and also just people trying it. That's one of the harder things I have to do sometimes, is get people to eliminate some of these things out of their diet. How would you tell patients, or how do you tell patients or assist them to get certain foods out of their diet if they're problematic for them?
For one thing, to keep a food journal. I think it's really important. People usually don't realize what they put in their mouth. Mm-hmm. They also don't realize that response if it occurs 2 days later. So if they're actually journaling what they've eaten, then they can see that, you know, a day or two later, oh, I did get a headache.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't feel good. Maybe I got diarrhea or constipation, but it wasn't immediately after they ate the food. Mm-hmm. If they see a pattern, then they understand a little better.
Then they can see that it might be still an immune response, just not the classic type that they've all been taught, that hives or something like that, that's usually more immediate.
Exactly.
With patients in terms of diet, how... It seems so much easier than it used to be to find foods that can fit with a diet that is maybe more low inflammation. And that has to do with the availability of places like, I'm not trying to shill for them or anything, but Whole Foods. This has grown greatly, and it's funny because it used to be the way all foods were.
This is true.
And then as we got more mechanized and more factory farms and then depended more on... and looked more at production and making things pretty and making them easy to sell, we've lost the nutritive or the push for nutrition, but that has come back. Do you find it easier to have patients have access to these foods than it used to be?
Absolutely. If someone needs to be gluten-free, it's really easy now to find gluten-free stores. It's easy to find gluten-free restaurants. And people don't realize there's really 4 things that will help you be healthy. Hmm. Number one, exercise. Number 2, eat as well as you can. Number 3, make sure you're nutritionally sound. And make 4, that's probably having your hormones balanced.
It's the one Hippocrates didn't know about or left out.
Yes.
But we've advanced. Not only has the availability of food that is a little more aligned with people's health changed, but in my experience, the openness of even standard clinicians has really changed. Have you seen that in your practice over the last several years?
Absolutely. When I first started doing this kind of medicine 17 years ago, because for 20 years I was an ER physician, but for the last 17 years I've been doing a more functional medicine approach, people were very resistant from the clinician's viewpoint. Mm-hmm. Now, much more commonly, probably 70% of the physicians I talk to on a regular basis are more open to at least having their patients take things like omega-3 fatty acids, fish oil.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen that very, very commonly with probiotics. I mean, I very much remember 7-8 years ago, it was extremely rare to have anyone but only the most holistic of a pediatric group recommend or utilize those. Now it seems very commonplace in our community. People get on Culturel, and I think part of that is from direct public marketing, and that gets, I won't say a bad rap, but it's a criticism of it is that, you know, people when it comes to pharmaceutical companies pushing drugs, and I've heard my colleagues in medicine say, well, gosh, I don't want people to go out there and hear about drugs that way. But it has really increased the kind of awareness of certain disease states that has brought people to our offices. And I think the same has been and is true for more of these functional medicine kind of approaches. I mean, I've got so many patients on, say, Culturel because they saw an ad for it, but the concept made sense. And I think that's one of the things that really helped me going to lectures that, you know, listening to you talk, is that so much of what struck me was that these are a lot of things patients will sometimes bring to their attention to us and ask us questions when they come in the door. They've already made the decision that more of the standard medical approach didn't have all the answers. Do you find that more patients now come to you armed more with information?
Absolutely. Before, people would have a little bit, maybe I heard of something like coenzyme Q10, but now they come in and say, hi, I'm taking a medication. I think it depletes my body of Q10. How much do I take? Mm-hmm. So there is a whole different idea. People, for example, are not resistant in just the whole idea of taking vitamins. Of course, it's really important to eat right first, mm-hmm. but we can't get all of our nutrients from food. And so as we age, particularly over the age of 50, then sometimes some supplements are helpful.
And how do people find sources for those supplements that are of quality?
Well, we want to take what's called pharmaceutical grade. Pharmaceutical grade nutrients mean two things. Number one, it's guaranteed to be 100% pure mm-hmm. with outside verification from another company. Number two, it is what we call bioavailable, meaning that it gets into the body and it does what it is supposed to do.
Excellent. Well, Dr. Smith, that is all for this segment that I wanted to, but I'd love to have you back and do another show if we could.
Oh, I'd love to be invited back. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us on Healthy Bloomington with Dr. Andree.